One of the things I truly love about Rudy was he really wanted to teach us how to have a life. He wanted us to have the materials, the capacity, the intelligence, the insight, the sensitivity to live a day-to-day existence. And he was really aware that most of us were wanting in that department. If anything, one of the reasons people pursued a spiritual life is because they often felt that they couldn't quite make it in the world. They felt inadequate, frightened, uncertain, unprepared. It goes on and on. You know, some of those words may percolate through you when I say them. And he just felt you can't have a spiritual life until you have a human life. That you had to get your life working in order. And I talk about it a lot, but I also talk a lot about this idea of awakening and enlightenment. And I think a lot of people are very confused by why should they bother with their worldly life when there's this greater life to attain, and maybe we can bypass having to worry about life in the world and just go straight to the graduate program. And you know, it doesn't work that way. It just, you can't do it. And what I see in so many people is this feeling that somehow the spiritual life will elevate them in a way so that the worldly life will support them and take care of them when they reach into this ultimate space. And here's what happens, and I learned this very early on. I learned it in the drug days of the 60s when I would take these psychedelic journeys off into what were truly remarkable spaces. They were worlds that completely altered my perception of this world. They really made this world look like a speck in a vast universe. And I would experience this sense of cosmic oneness, of vastness, of beauty, of infinite journey. I mean, on and on, these remarkable, remarkable things, some of which were terrifying and some of which were absolutely incredible. And then when the journey was over, I would be back here, trying to remember that. And something told me that the journey of a spiritual life was to get back to there and live there permanently. That's the goal. And I have to say, if there is a profoundly central fallacy in the pursuit of spiritual work, it's the thought that what you're aiming for is that. And the reason you're not aiming for that is because the only way you stay there maybe is if you OD. And I had people I knew who did that. It's not a great way to go, I don't think. I think there is a reason we return to this. There is a reason we come back here over and over and over. Every effort to find altered consciousness, to find a way to live beyond this, always returns to this. You know, I don't care if you are a drug addict and, you know, and doing heroin every day and stealing from everyone you know, trying to get high and get that experience. The horrible truth of that is, without that drug, you're back here in worsening conditions. Worse and worse and worse until you're, you know, either in jail or dead. If you're taking pain pills, if you're taking alcohol, the endless series of things we pursue in life, including success, including even happiness, all of that has temporary aspect. It always returns to this. And what is this? What is this that we return to? It feels in most ways complicated. It feels in some ways uncomfortable. Bodily existence is not heaven for anybody. The idea that we're born these sweet, little, innocent children and then are sort of tossed, it's not quite tossed, but we're sort of pushed into the world. Most of us, I remember myself going, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I can't do this. It's too big. It was always scary. The world was always a scary place to me. But once I got into school and I realized they're going to teach me some rules of how to make this work, I got a little more comfortable. They sort of build you up to some way or another engage physical manifested life. And so we all get a certain set of tools, but I knew the tools I had were limited. My particular tools were intellectual tools. I knew how to write. I knew how to spell. I knew how to type, which was the most important class I ever took, I think, typing. I really understood that I had a certain capacity to survive in society, in the world. What I didn't have was any ability to survive outside of the world, meaning in the woods. I don't mean the world of cultured society. Put me in the woods, I don't know a thing. I don't know anything. Even in the world, I can't fix the plumbing. Mm-hmm. I can't do the electricity. I'd have trouble building a house, although I've managed to build some things in my life with my wife's help, because without Blanche, I couldn't do any of it. But the fact is, we find helpers. We find ways of doing. We hire somebody to do this. We hire someone to do that. And all together, collectively, we keep this thing working. None of us know how to do the whole thing. Nobody. Nobody is sufficient. And those who are relatively sufficient, who can fix the car and fix the plumbing and, you know, write books about it, you know, and write poetry. I mean, wow, that's a wonderful sort of expanded capacity. What we all have to do is find out who we are, what our skills are, and it's really interesting how life unfolds, because none of us come into the world knowing very much about who we are. We start to be told who we are by our parents. You're a boy, you're a girl. Talia said to me the other day, I don't have a penis. That's a major realization for kids, you know? They really get it. They get it early on. They're not like someone else. And you start to figure out how you fit into the world. And you start to fit in partly by what people tell you, but also by what you're attracted to. What do you like? You know, sports. That for me wasn't the path. I didn't like sports because I had no aptitude for it. I liked something called theater and writing. I don't know why, but I liked it. And I followed the path. You know, Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. But that's really, you follow the thing you like. And you create and you evolve a life that works for you. And then it doesn't work for you. Why? Because it opens a passion. And then it says you've got to become good at it. You've got to figure it out. And then it gives you obstacles, many, many obstacles. And it doesn't give you all the things you want and desire. And that's really painful, not to get what you want. And people who get stuck in wanting one thing and not getting it are among the most unhappy people in the world. And the truth is, you want more than one thing in life. What do you really, really want in life? You know, there's so many stories. Wendy's sitting here. You know, Wendy wanted to be an actress more than anything in the world. But the world didn't give her a career. It gave her a lot of opportunities and a lot of extraordinary moments. But it wasn't going to support her. And she discovered, reaching inside herself, that she loved helping people, healing people, and decided at the age of 46 to go back to school and become a nurse, and now has been in school for 4 years and wants to become a nurse practitioner, and it's just working more and more profoundly into the depth of that capacity, and just discovered that her next job is going to be in Fairbanks, Alaska. Nobody wants to go to Fairbanks, Alaska. But Wendy wants to go because she gets, this is part of the growth that's happening for her. I have a cousin named Mark Zingali, and Mark also wanted to be an actor and couldn't. And he finally said, I can't be that, and found something that involved some actorly skills, but really was ultimately law school and becoming a lawyer, and has become an enormously successful lawyer, supports his family, a wonderful wife and two children, with extraordinary sort of beneficence, and has found happiness. The one road that you think is yours and the only way to go is not always the only way to go. It can go a million different directions. Where is the happiness that you seek? Well, it's very clearly here. It's here. You don't know that. You think it's out there. But people who start to do spiritual work really start to feel that the happiness is not based on outside achievement, it's reflected in outside achievement. Happiness is something that is. It's something, essentially, that you have. And the problem is our mind segregates us from our happiness. It makes us unworthy of our happiness, and it does it in many ways, and it reflects itself more particularly in what I call dysfunction. Dysfunctional life is an unhappy life because you're not living in your happiness. And happiness is a weird word, and I'll try to elaborate it a little bit. Happiness is, oh, I feel so happy. Happiness is contentment, a sense of what I have is wonderful. What I have is beautiful. It's not everything I wanted. It's not everything that's available. I don't have the whole world. I don't have $1 billion. I don't have my own jet plane. Of course you don't have half of that stuff, or a tenth of, or one percentile. But what do you have? If you're lucky and you sit still in yourself, this thing opens up inside. I always call it the portal in your heart. And what you find is contentment. Enough okayness, a quality of it's fine. Everyone who pursues that in the world will often be frustrated. And people who achieve a great deal in the world are often frustrated because contentment hasn't come. You know, I know a lot of people in the film industry who have achieved enormous success, and they are not content. Truly not content. They fear only that they need to have another success to stay whatever they think they are. And then another success and another success. And you can't perpetuate that. You can only take it so far. Life will not carry it beyond a certain place. What you're looking for, you already have. What you want in yourself is sitting right there. Not to find that is because you're not looking for truth. You're looking for the illusion. The illusion is something out there will give you what you want. The truth is you have what you want. It's right there. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything except find it. You all know that I talk about this idea of oneness, totality, wholeness, and the absolute. Oneness is a really interesting phenomenon because oneness is not eternal contentment. Oneness is all there is. So when you go inside and you find contentment as a gift that's already there, and you sit in that, you will also find all the things that come or exist to remove you from contentment. Doubt, worry, insecurity, fear, everything. All the stuff that all human beings find inside, and they disturb contentment. So what we tend to do is try to find more contentment. Where do we find more contentment? Well, you think, okay, if I sit 12 hours a day in my little space of contentment, I'll be safe and secure, and I won't have to deal with the stuff that disturbs me. So you try to meditate longer. And I went to meditation retreats where people sat 14 hours a day. Other than the time they were sleeping, they just sat, Oh. And I remember there was a guy when Muktananda came to visit us, a disciple of Muktananda's, and he came into the classroom one day, sat down on the stage next to Muktananda because Muktananda brought him there. And 2 days later, he was still there. And Rudy was enraged. He was enraged by this. And he went into the classroom and says, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" And the guy was like, oh, you know, horrified, horrified. He said, "That is not spirituality. That is a trance. You are in a trance. A trance is not what you're looking for." And this kid was totally shaken up, or as were all of us who saw what Rudy was doing. But it was the greatest gift he could ever give this kid, because this kid didn't understand that this trance of endless contentment is no different than a psychedelic drug. Pure, unending contentment isn't reality. Reality is all of the above. All of the above. And what you have to do is go, "I get it. I get it." And you own it. You sit with it. And if you want an intense spiritual work, sit with what is. If you want to know truth, don't deny what's in front of you. Don't think, "This is wrong and that's right. This is how it should be. This is unfortunately how it is." Figure it out. It is what it is because it's exactly what's supposed to be. Once you own that, there is a kind of something, and I will call it contentment plus. It's an incredible yes to life. Yes. It's a hard yes. It's a scary yes. It's a big commitment to all that is. But that's what happens right here when you start to go, "Okay, I am." Once that occurs, how do you live your life? Well, two words define much of what has occurred for me in this clarity. One is wonder, and the other is gratitude. Wonder at the mystery, which is unbelievably powerful, and the knowing that I don't get it at all. I do not understand any of this. And as much as we think we get it, as much as you know about quarks and nuons and all the particles of matter, as much as you think you know about anything, you just know something about the narrative of what this is, and that's a tiny piece of something much, much bigger. You don't know. You truly don't know. What you do know is good enough. If you know how to be a plumber, that is really valuable. You'll actually get a good living out of it. If you know how to do something well, you'll have a life. You can support yourself. The world is pretty amazing, even though there's terrible unemployment right now, like 8%. That's 92% who are not unemployed, or whatever the percentage is. People are out there doing and working, and it's an amazing world that many people can function and grow and evolve in the world. How many of those people are experiencing wonder and gratitude? That's a big question. And one of the key components of what is a spiritual life, a life that you want to call spiritual, is that you find that. How do you find wonder? That's a hard one. I mean, part of me would say, just look at stuff. Just look. But most of you go, eh. You bought that at the store. That's a plant. That's a flower. That's a picture. That's a ceiling. That's light coming out of a light bulb. You know, where's the wonder in that? And then suddenly, at a certain point, you go, how is it that I switch on a light and this light appears in the middle of darkness? How does that happen? And you might have a little it's sort of a mental curiosity about it, intellectual curiosity, but I'll never figure that out. I know my mind is never going to get electricity, but I see that and I go, And I know what it's like when the electricity doesn't come on, you know, because that's scary. You know, you have a blackout or something and there's no electricity, then you appreciate light. But how do you find the wonder in everything? Well, you just stop to look at it. You really just stop to look at it. You know, I've talked a lot about things like chairs. You know, why the hell do you have a chair? How is it that you can sit down and this thing supports you in midair? What is that? How do you have a body that sits? It goes on and on. I mean, the list is unending. But wonder is at the core. Gratitude. If you want to be a real human being, find gratitude. Find it. If you don't have gratitude, something is not working in you. You are not a human being. If you don't have gratitude, you are an angry child. Gratitude is at the core of what allows you to have a spiritual life. And I have to say, one of the things that bothers me a lot, and I'm sorry if this is going to make you all suddenly feel guilty, but very little gratitude ever comes back to me from any of you. I don't get a New Year's card, I don't get a thank you, I don't get a birthday card, I don't get nothing. I don't need it. I don't need it. But you do. You need to say thank you. You need to find gratitude. You need to give it every opportunity you have, and not just to me, to everyone in your life, even the ones you can't stand, because you're not being able to stand them defines you on some level. It teaches you people you don't like are as valuable to you as the ones you like. Loving your enemies, you know, Christ was, that was one of his great teachings. Love your enemies. That's not a casual idea. It's an actual thing to do. Find that in yourself. If you want a spiritual life, you have to create that. And again, Rudy's brilliance was practice. Make it happen. Invigorate your life with all of these things. Kindness. Bring kindness into your life. Not for you. Bring kindness so that the world can benefit from it. And then you will find a residual of that, which is kindness put out becomes an environment that you live in. You know, an old line that Rudy used, and I've used it a lot, and it's very instructive. Judge the success of your spiritual life by the happiness of the people around you. Not by you, by the people around you. I was telling James a story yesterday about when Ghost was finishing, closing up and finalized, and we had a good night party in New York, and it was really kind of amazing and sad and beautiful and sweet. And then Richard Fleischman, the star of the show, had a party 2 days later, and kind of a second party to say goodbye. And I was already upstate New York, and I did not want to go to that party. I just said, I've already been to the party. I've already said goodbye to everybody. Why would I want to do it twice? Everything in me shut down. Everything just shut down. I didn't want to do it. It was only going to be painful. And I asked Blanche to drive me to the train station without knowing if I was going to get on the train. So she drives me all the way to the train station, and I'm still sitting there. And finally, I open the door of the car, and I get out. And I walk to the door of the station, and she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her. And then I said, I'm here. And I went and got on the train. I took the train into New York City. I went to the party, and it was one of the most wonderful parties imaginable. But there was someone at that party who had recently awakened and was struggling with it. And I don't know if he knew that was my sort of background, but he sought me out. And we had a dialogue that I think maybe have been life-changing for him, certainly significant, and was significant for me. But here's what comes out of that story, and I think it's really important. I didn't go to that party for me. I went to that party for him, and I didn't know it. I went because he needed me, not because I needed to go to the party. None of us get that. We don't understand that It's not about us. It's not about us. If you're having a spiritual life, a real spiritual life, it's about you putting yourself into a place where you can benefit those around you, where it's about them first. That changes everything. It changes the equation. You are not at the center of the universe. They are. Put yourself into a place of vastness. Understand it doesn't swirl around you. You are part of the swirl. You're part of what's happening in this amazing universe that we all inhabit. You are meant to be in it. But you're not going to be of any help to people if you haven't found contentment, if your life isn't in order in some way, if it's not functioning, if you haven't forgiven your enemies, if you haven't found a way to make peace with those around you. All these old adages, they're all true. If you haven't done the work, it's not going to happen. You're not going to serve anybody. You will go to a party and suck the energy out of the room. Me, 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 me. It's disgusting. It's totally disgusting. Everybody hates it. You go to a room with people and you're sitting with someone who's going, well, me, 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 me. You can't wait to get away. You can't. You don't want that. But if you go into a room with someone who says, so how are you? And really means it and wants to hear your story and is open to acknowledge you and to reference you, to love you, to feel you. If you bring that into a room, it's an extraordinary thing, because that person will flower and you will feel so wonderful and something exchanges that's really, truly beautiful. I may have said this last week, I can no longer remember what I talk about, but Rudy would always go to a party and seek out the person he was least interested in. That's an incredible dictum. Don't go to the people you know and love and it's easy for you and it's all done. Go to the ones you don't know, you don't have a clue to, and go, who are you? Why are you? What are you? Sit with them. Talk with them. It'll change your life. It makes you human. Find this thing in you that needs to understand how to live every day consciously. Rudy hated the term enlightenment. He hated it. He didn't believe in it. He said enlightenment comes when you're dead, which may or may not be true. But I do think he believes in consciousness. And consciousness was being more conscious. Every day being more conscious of others and of yourself and of your dialogue with and relationship with others. If you can find that, if you can feel in yourself that you can go up to the people who caused you the most grief in life and be kind to them, not hate them, not wish them badly. If you can just feel content with their being, you'll change your entire chemistry. You'll become a different person. The way you stay stuck is when you lock into all of these definitions of yourself. I am someone who hates him, them, half my universe. Trust me, there are people like that. I hate whatever, Arabs, Jews, Christians, Buddhists. You know, that's a big segment of the world to walk around hating, honestly. And I only love my group. I only love my group, which may be 12 people or 2 people. You know, compared to the possibility of love, that's very, very minuscule. It's better than not loving anybody, perhaps. But it's not enough. To become a real human being is to become available, vast, aware of possibility, to be willing to go to Fairbanks to work with children, to work with pediatric nursing. You know, I mean, I love Wendy so much, but she gave up all of these illusions. Illusions is the wrong word. They were truths, but she gave up so much to follow this other inkling that has become so rich and rewarding and giving and available to other people. And we had lunch yesterday, and I mean, the energy that comes back, the truth that comes back, the sense of having a life is really remarkable. You know, James came in from San Francisco to do body work on me, and my body's in, you know, I've been going through all this stuff. I think I've all told you, but I fell when I was pushing Talia one day and threw everything out of whack. And lifting babies at my age, as they get to be heavier and heavier, not a good thing. Crawling into a bouncy ball hut with Talia and finding my rotator cuff ripping, you know. I was really in bad shape and couldn't sleep, and James came down from San Francisco and has caused me more pain than anyone I know. And I have nothing but gratitude. Nothing but gratitude. And in truth, to get to the core of what I had to deal with, had to go into pain. You know, when he found the spongy stuff, which is good stuff, he then had to go into the more complex fibrous stuff that was hard. And that's where you don't want to go. Nobody wants to go there. Why? Because it hurts. But I knew he was helping me. And I just knew, let go, let go. And it was really fiery, painful. But every second I said, this is amazing. I am grateful. I am grateful. And I am. I'm just profoundly grateful for, and I'm profoundly grateful for each of you. And I don't think you guys completely get how grateful I am that you show up here. Because you do this thing for me, which is you create a demand in me by showing up to open my heart and find a way to serve you and to nurture you and to love you and to comfort you and to love you in every molecule of my body. And if you didn't do that, what I would end up with would be a world of strangers walking by very quickly where I would have no access or very limited access. I mean, I really try when I'm at the supermarket to acknowledge the person who is doing the groceries. You know, I try every waiter I'm ever with. I try to connect, to get a name, you know, to make it something real, but it's a 12th of a second. You know, it's real, it's nice, it's good, but it's not this. It's not this. People sitting truly open, devastatingly open to one another. It's what this is all about. And life provides very little opportunity for that. But you guys make it possible. So I have nothing but gratitude for the fact that you get in your car and you drive here and you sit down and you open your eyes and you open yourself as deeply as you can and make yourself present. That is an enormous gift. And I try to honor that gift by making myself as present as I can to you. This is called spiritual exchange. It is the highest pinnacle of human life. It's the best we can do, is to love each other at this level. You know, there are even, you know, couples who can't look at each other, who can't engage each other, you know, who have to close their eyes or be in the dark to find one another. This is not that. This is open-eyed, bright morning, sunlight coming and going, love. It's a really beautiful, beautiful thing. And, you know, if you have other places where you can get this on a daily basis, by all means, go. But I don't think there are a lot of places that make this possible. They just don't seem to be. So, you guys make my human life rich. And I'm finding myself so beyond gratitude. That's how we want to live. It's how we want to live with each other. It's really having a spiritual life in the human life. And to wrap this up, where does that all take place? Here and now. It doesn't take place out in the ether. It doesn't take place only in sitting in pure internal self-aware bliss. It takes place in this remarkable exchange with what is, in a certain very extraordinary way, ourself. This is ourself. This is ourself. This is ourself. This is ourself. You see that on camera? That's ourself. That's us. That's nothing but us. Live in wonder. Live with gratitude. Any questions? I'm not going to push you to have questions, but I'm going to say one last thing here. There are groups that I respect a lot of spiritual seekers where there's nothing but questions. Really profound, serious questions. And if you find that in yourself, not asking them is a mistake. If you have serious questions, ask them.
What are some ways to, in times that are extremely challenging, to cultivate gratitude?
Well, if you want tricks and things.
Well, maybe not tricks, but help.
Help me, I don't know, but...
Tools.
I guess introspection is one of the tools. Look at your life and look what you do have. Don't only look at what you don't have, because looking at what you do have is an automatic key to gratitude. For example, waking up in the morning and there's sunlight. You know, James is staying up here in a room and there's some bird that starts cooing very early in the morning, and there's a rooster across the way, actually a whole bunch of roosters. And we had a friend here years ago who would get up, and we had a whole bunch of rocks upstairs to throw at anything he could throw it at, because he hated it, he was miserable. James would wake up every morning saying, "Oh my God, I'm in the country." You know, it was just totally different approach to the exact same stimulus, you know. It's like, wake up in the morning and sit there for 5 minutes and just try to feel, one, that you're alive, two, that not everything hurts, you know, there are things that don't hurt, that you're going to have an opportunity to brush your teeth, which actually feels good, I think, usually, possibly take a shower, which is an amazing experience, warm water or hot water, and you know, it's like, where does that come from? You know, I was just watching a thing on television about these soldiers in Afghanistan. This guy sent over this thing for them so they could get hot water showers. You want to see gratitude. Hot water showers for guys in Afghanistan is unbelievable. So you have to look at what you have, not through the scrim of what I don't have, but what do I have? And it's very interesting. If you start to make a list, it's a long list. It's a much longer list. You have soft clothes, not scratchy. You have socks to cover your feet and shoes to wear on hard ground. You know, you have a beautiful appearance. Not everybody gets that. You know, you have a real sensitive heart. You feel deeply. You know, sometimes it causes you to hurt a lot, but it also causes you to feel a lot. Feeling a lot is something to be grateful for, because it's a wonderful way to be alive, to feel. I know people who don't feel, just, and they go through life totally protected, but they miss it all, because most of life is a felt experience, not just an observed experience. To just see it isn't enough. So there's a list, and you can actually literally compile a list and just see, and go to that list every morning and either add to it or just repeat it, and have one of those things go click. Okay, I'll be grateful for that. And it adds. It goes on and on. I mean, the thing that's come to me is that there's nothing not to be grateful for. Literally nothing, including the worst stuff that happens. You know, and I know some of the worst stuff that happens in your life, and I, you know, I really love you, and I've known you a long time, and you've had, you know, drama, your share of drama. But all that drama, I'm going to use Shakespeare for a moment, all's well that ends well. If your life ends well, and it can, I believe will, all of that drama will have been fodder for the mill, whatever that line is. It's grist for the mill. It will have built you into who you become. And I've always had this sense of you as, you know, the 70-year-old woman of enormous awareness and enlightenment. You will have stories to tell, and you will have people to tell them to. And I don't know who they will be, but they will want to hear them, and you will be of enormous help to people because you've lived it. Not because you saw it, You've lived it. You couldn't help but live it. It's an incredible thing. And you have a capacity for love that is enormous, really enormous. And, you know, if you don't have what I would call strength in that, so you fall into the, not love or into feeling bad. There's all these things that happen for you. And getting a stronger capacity to be present will allow all that other stuff to be less disorienting. But, you know, you have a big job here, and you have a lot of input and a lot coming in, so that's your life's work. Rudy would say, at least you're lucky, you know what your work is. You know what it is. Most people don't know what their work is. They have no sense of it. Yours is right in front of you. So out of that will come gratitude. And that letter you wrote me the other day, Tara, I've rarely gotten a letter expressing so much gratitude ever. So, you know, don't tell me you don't know how to do it. You're really quite gifted at it.
Thank you. So, what does one do about the angry child?
That's a really good question. The angry child, Michael, is in every human being. There's nobody who doesn't have an angry child inside, you know, because we're all kicked out of the nest, really, one way or another, and we're all not happy about it. And what's so fascinating to me is to sit with all of you and see the angry child, which I see all the time. Part of what I do is I try to take that child, almost literally, take it like this, and just say, it's okay. It's okay. Just to remind you, every one of us wants to go back to the womb on some level. Every human being is struggling out here, some more than others. We all want to be this again, comforted. If you don't have someone who's going to help re-comfort you, I mean, Rudy told me that he re-parented me. And I really felt that. He taught me how to love again. He taught me how to be loved. And I try to do that. I'm not as good as Rudy. But what you can do is to find in yourself that place that actually comforts you. That's kind of the avenue that one finds in the heart chakra. When you enter into this space, you finally find this thing that goes, oh, Michael, I really love you, Michael. That's what it finds. That's what it says. It will sound just like my voice, actually. Mm-hmm. Only it will be a little bit more your voice. But it has that quality. It really loves you. It really does. And I really love you. And I really do. And once you start to pick that up, it will start to find its way in, and it will become internalized, and you will see it was always your voice. Because everything I'm saying is you talking. I mean, you don't necessarily know that, but it's true. Everything that's coming out of here is yourself speaking. And it loves you. Truly loves you. And when you feel that, you will be no longer an angry child. You'll walk around going, I get it. This was all worth it. Wendy.
You know, this actually came up for me when we were having lunch yesterday, and I didn't get to ask it. And it's an and there's an element of what I'm asking in both of these questions as well, which is this idea of when things are hard, that's when it does, you get very, you know, that me. When the truth is, you're the blinds and you're the plant. How do you remember you're the blinds and you're the plant? In those moments?
Well, there's the pre-awakened and the post-awakened. Pre-awakened, which I call practice spiritual life,
yeah,
is reminding yourself.
Yeah.
Post-awakened, it tells you every day.
Right.
That's a really nice switch, because
yeah,
you don't have to do the work. I mean, you do the work,
yeah,
there's still work, but you don't have to remind yourself, and there's no you telling you to do anything. It just is. It's what is. And that switch is a great gift, and you know, if people in spiritual realms seek that thing, and usually at some point give up because they don't know how to get there, and then something goes click, oh, I am that. And that's all it is. It's all it is. It's a realization. That's why they call it realization. But when you're trying to realize, you will never realize. You can't. It's not, you can't make this thing happen. It just happens. But if it doesn't happen, which is going to be for most people, and there's no gradation, I have to really tell you, being a spiritual seeker and an awakened seeker are basically the same thing. except you don't know that. That's the only difference. You just don't know it. But what happens is you walk around having a life of gratitude that you consciously achieve and work at, or you have a life of gratitude that just flows because it is. Practice it. Remind yourself. Do what you have to do. You're a perfect example of someone who does that. You just do it. You do it every day. You find your way. And half the time in my extraordinary awakened state, I am miserable. I'm depressed that things are going on. It's really hard. But I'm not fighting it at all. Okay. Not at all. I'm going, oh, the clouds just turned gray. Oh, sun just came out. Oh, thunderstorms. Oh, that's all it is. It's just stuff. You don't become this perfect, joyous entity. You become you with all that stuff, the totality of you. People who think awakening is somehow superhuman, it's the exact opposite. It's completely human. That's the thing that's so powerful. It's just being you. Only suddenly you realize how vast you is. You know? And you has, it has earthquakes and volcanoes. You has stories of Buddha and Christ. You has everything. It's all there. It's all you. What else is it? It's just you. But it's not you, Wendy, or Bruce. It's yourself. And that clarity becomes crystal clear. And you live your life. The idea that you're going to escape life, free yourself of it, forget it. I mean, look, there are people, I think, who say that's what will happen. I don't buy it. If it turns out to be true, if some of these guys are really right, that all your suffering goes away completely and all that stuff, I mean, and suffering does go away in a sense, because although things hurt, you don't suffer because you're not projecting that hurt into infinite time. You're just going, oh, it hurts. Ooh, this really hurts. You know, I wake up in the morning, I've had trouble sleeping because of the shoulders. When in the middle of the night, I'm not happy. I wake up in the morning and the sun is there, I'm totally happy. I'm not projecting, oh God, tonight's going to be terrible. I don't do that till I get in bed. Then I go, oh God, here we go. But I even, then I just lie down and I get a good couple hours before it all kicks in. But you don't free yourself from life. And if you do find infinite, endless happiness, wow. If that happens at some moment, you know, I'll vote for that. It's a great thing. But if it doesn't happen that way, what does happen is wondrous. And you will be grateful. And I know you sense wonder, and I know you're full of gratitude. So, what more do you need? You know, the horrible thing about teaching about awakening is people feel there's you know, some break in the fabric. You know, I'm not there. Every awakened being will tell you, you are there, you just don't know it. That's all there is. You just don't know it. How will you know it? Ask questions, come to these classes, make a life that seeks it so that one day you can go, oh. And that's all it will be, oh. Or if it happens prematurely, which it does for some people, it's like, oh! It's a shock. It's a true shock. And it will change, you know, you'll do like Eckhart did, which is sit on a park bench for 2 years going, everything's different. But for most people who've been working at this, realization is just that. It's like, oh. And then you cry for a while because it's really beautiful. And then you go back to being whatever, which is partly an ego mind, you know, which we all have, and partly a vastness of being. And the ego mind doesn't know it's vast, but the vastness of being knows what the ego mind is. And it makes peace with the ego mind. And it just changes the dynamic.
I suppose this might be a slight refrain of Tara's question, but I hear that and I feel like, okay, practice gratitude, and I see my two beautiful daughters. I mean,
that's
you just stop right there and be happy for a lifetime. But and many other things, but I guess in a way my question is, so what happens when you try to practice gratitude and then you find, oh, I'm still not that. I keep coming back to not feeling that gratitude, not feeling that contentment, amazed by the power of the ego mind, how I become the angry child, or the one guy who's holding on to the one thing and is not letting go, and that desire and wanting is, in fact, it becomes pure by the day, not less, but more.
I get it. I get it. And I actually believe that the universe is constructed to make that happen. Because how does this world get built if it isn't out of that kind of drive, that kind of frustration, that kind of difficulty? But the thing is, when you see what that is and you join it, rather than fight it's not being there or fight that it's too strong and it's frustrated, you just go, you'll do everything in your power to get where you want to go. And if you get there, you'll have the extraordinary sense of achievement. If you don't get there, you will always have those two little girls who will now at some point be grown women who will bring you more joy than you can possibly imagine. And the things that got done or didn't get done, you will discover, kind of don't matter. That's all I can tell you. I mean, having built a resume and gotten to a point where I now see the resume starting to become past tense, I realize it doesn't matter. I know it's weird, but who cares? Who cares if you had a movie made or didn't have a movie made? I know it seems really important when you're in your 40s and 50s or 30s or 20s. And you're 70, who cares? You know? I mean, it was a great part of a narrative. It was a great story. But while you're in that part of your life, you care a lot. And you care a lot because the universe is geared to make you care. Rudy pushed me to have a career. He pushed me. He did. You know what Rudy did? He wrote an entire 22 songs for a musical and said, write me a book. He created songs so I would write a musical, so I would get going, because I was not going anywhere. It never went anywhere, and the songs weren't great. And we actually got music composed for all of them. But the fact is, he pushed me to this life of achievement, you know, and it's wonderful. You've made two movies. People care about those movies. They love those movies. They're on television. See, it was on Sundance the other day. You know, so you have 10 of them, or 20 of them, or 2 of them. I mean, I get it. What are you going to do? You have to have money to pay for your kids. Yes, it's all part of the system. It's how it works. And so you have to engage it with everything in you, but you don't have to become totally distraught by it. You just don't have to become hating and cynical and angry and all of these things that so many people become. The great lesson of my career is that I survived it as a human being in a world that doesn't promote human beings. And that's what a spiritual life does. It allows you to go through all the drama and all the struggle and come out of it whole. Anyone else? Well, thank you for the questions. We're around. Next week I'm not around, but there will be class. We're going to go see Talia for a few days. And then classes will continue till the end of March.
No brunch next week.
Okay. Thank you guys so much.